All right, this is Film Study with Tim McCusick for week 7 as the Ravens once again lost, this time in Minnesota, 24-16. Let's just get straight into it and get Ken McCusick on the phone. Ken, how are you doing today?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Life is busy, which means I have no time to think about how bad the Ravens are.
That's true. Feel the same way. A lot of writing this week, and then we're right back to Miami and see how that goes.
Right, and unfortunately, I don't think there's a whole lot to be hopeful for. Maybe you can help me out with the defense. But in games, it seems like the Ravens keep getting these games where you're thinking, all right, well, they can bounce back this week, and they just go further into the hole.
So. Right. It certainly hasn't been impressive. They've had some opportunities to beat some young quarterbacks, some backup quarterbacks, haven't so far been able to do it. Get another opportunity with Jay Cutler probably out for Thursday's game to beat a backup. The backup in Miami's pretty good, is Matt Moore, but still, opportunity is here.
Yeah, the list of quarterbacks that the Ravens have faced during this time is something that if you saw that list preseason, you would be excited. Mm-hmm. Now it's, well, that did not work. Mm-hmm. So, but before we get to the Ravens game, There's other teams that are getting blown out and falling apart as well. And yesterday in the Jaguars-Colts games, we made a big deal that the Jaguars beat the Ravens, the Jaguars beat the Steelers. The Jaguars are showing that they're a good team, and yesterday they blew out the Colts. What's going on?
So they blew out the Colts 27-0, and if you want to take an oddball bet, see if you can get any money down on the Jaguars to get a bye in the AFC, because I think they have an excellent chance at it right now. They play in a very weak division. They've got divisional games left. The team that definitely has a chance to have some home field advantage, maybe not the number one seed in the AFC, but the number two is certainly a possibility, and the Jaguars look pretty good. Yesterday, 10 sacks against the Colts, 20 quarterback hits. Now, quarterback hit and knockdown of the quarterback. Jacoby Brissett must feel like a Bobo doll at this point, but it was ugly. After the game, reporter asked T.Y. Hilton, you know, what's wrong? And he said, it's the offensive line. They need to block.
Okay. So the offensive line. The whole... I wish the Ravens' issues were as simple as it's the offensive line. I'm pretty sure that's not as simple as the Colts' answers, but at least you can blame someone.
Yeah, well, he's right in terms of the correct assignment of blame, and he's entirely wrong in terms of publicly lambasting his teammates. So people, you know, will teach him to be more careful in interviews, but I think it's a cautionary tale for the Ravens because right now they could really fall apart as a team and start pointing the finger at each other, and that'll be one of the signals that Harbaugh has lost the team because he's generally pretty good at keeping criticisms of players in-house.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'd have no problem right now if Joe Flacco came out tomorrow and said, look, I've got no one to throw to. Look at who you put me out there with me. And yes, that would be putting down his teammates, but I would have no problem with him defending himself there.
Well, he'd be right, and again, I don't want to hear it.
Sure. No, it definitely you want to say that there's... You prefer if the clubhouse all stays together, some team unity. We know that had a lot to do with why Brian Billick got let go is because he lost the locker room. So you got to say, yeah, if things go in that direction, then that is really bad for Harbaugh.
Now, this would be an interesting mock interview if you want to be Flacco and I be a reporter that's trying to stir trouble, but we'll do that another time.
Right, and my first lines would be go to M&T and you get this free bottle. Go to he's on commercials all the time. I don't get it because he doesn't have the personality for commercials, but he's got they like to put him up there. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's got the face. So so that's no good in Indianapolis, and it'll be interesting to see how the team responds to that mm-hmm. this coming week. But let's get to the Ravens game. And they went into this game was, yes, the Ravens were banged up, but the Vikings' offensive line was really banged up, and they had a crazy roster.
Yeah, they did. So the Vikings had problems on the offensive line, particularly during the game, which is actually probably worse because they were down to their last offensive line. They're down to their last five offensive linemen, I should say. But the Ravens went into this game. They had, on the Friday injury report, they had five players ruled out. They had Matthews, who was doubtful, so that means 75% chance not to play. And then they had 10 players with the questionable status. Now, if this were the Patriots, I wouldn't be too worried about it because Belichick would be playing all sorts of games with a questionable status. But as it turned out, Macklin was downgraded to out on game day. Matthews was confirmed as out on game day. So that left the Ravens with exactly 46 players to field. So who you field by position or trying to, you know, optimize who you have wasn't a question anymore. They only had 46 guys, so those are the guys that they dressed. So during the week, they reacquired Tony Bergstrom. They've since released him again, by the way, as the seventh healthy offensive lineman. Now, since they released Bergstrom again this week, it's interesting because I think if Matt Skura can play, Bergstrom probably stays cut, and the Ravens don't seem too concerned about potentially losing him.
Right, but it's a weird time to cut him when we're talking a short week. They play on Thursday.
Yeah, they had a pickup to make today, so they signed a tight end, and that's why they did it. But it is a weird time, and it seems like there's so little offensive line talent in the league right now. Tony Bergstrom must really be a damaged property to be released twice like this with basically no fear of being picked up by somebody else. So they signed Griff Whalen, who they'd released at camp, and he got 48 snaps in the game. That led all receivers.
Yeah, he seemed to be a guy that Flacco was comfortable throwing the ball to.
as comfortable as you can get from him being there that little
time. Yeah, he was at least trusted. Flacco trusted that he could catch the ball when thrown to him.
That's true. Didn't have a lot of yardage in the game, but that's okay. There were four true wide receivers that they had in the game. So they had Campanaro, Moore, Wallace, and Whalen. They had two tight ends, Boyle and Watson, and then they had the hybrid, Mayo, who got three offensive snaps in the game. He can play a little bit of both. But the weird thing was they activated seven defensive linemen in the game. Now, we love the defensive line depth, but they had never activated more than five for a single game. And last year, in 2016, we've talked about this before on the show, five defensive linemen is all they used the entire year for every single defensive snap. So to have seven ready for one game, and in fact six of them played on the defensive side of the ball, was already more than played in all of 2016.
Do you attribute that to the lack of bodies on the offensive side, that there aren't guys you can put in other positions, or do you think it's a see what sticks on the defensive side?
I mean, they had 46 players exactly. I mean, that's all I ascribe it to. I don't think they thought they could cut anyone on the defensive side that they wouldn't risk releasing, or risk losing to somebody else signing, I should say.
Okay.
So once you're in that position, you just have to kind of decide you're going to go with who you go to. Your special teams players are going to lean more heavily on defense, and I think they did. And then, you know, they had a player like Ricard who was used exclusively on offense, though it still wasn't, maybe it was three snaps, maybe it was five snaps. It wasn't much. But at least, you know, they're using him on the side of the ball where he can do more good. And, you know, they did the best they could in a very unfortunate situation, I guess is what I'd say.
Right. So we'll talk about offense on Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll get to that, and we'll get to the fact that, yeah, they started with four wide receivers, and within a minute we're down to three wide receivers.
There you go.
But let's start with this defense, and where should we start? Let's start with the blame, and how do we look at this defense? Where's the problems? We're not going to be a T.Y. Hilton and pinpoint one person. Who can we blame?
Well, we're the appropriate people outside the system. The players and coaches should not care about us in terms of assigning blame.
Good point. We're allowed to make those claims.
Yeah, so they're within the fair comment rules. But anyway. The Ravens had a very leaky run defense in this game. They allowed 5.1 yards per carry, and there's no sugarcoating this one. Even if you take out the big runs, they still were bad. So it was a bad day for that all the way around. But the funny thing is, I hear all kinds of theories about this that are between absurd and just kind of ill-conceived in terms of how bad they are. And I'm going to start from the most absurd and go.
Good, because you know I love the absurd. let's hop on those conspiracy theories.
Yeah, so I saw one thing in print that said that Bronson Cafusi was part of the problem in terms of the defensive line. Well, Bronson Cafusi played 5 snaps in this game. 4 of them were run snaps, and the Vikings piled up 15 yards rushing on those 4 snaps, so 3.75 yards per play.
So that's below the average.
Oh, certainly below the average, and Cafusi had 2 of the tackles. So regardless of what you think about his technique or his physicality or whatever, I mean, it's like blaming Donald Trump for the Black Plague. He wasn't there. I mean, it didn't have anything to do with it. So
now,
silly.
Do you think that's an easy thing to kind of call out because you're trying to be sound smart and Harbaugh called out Cafusi the week before?
I think that was part of the thing of it. I think that sometimes writers don't write without the snap data, and this came out, you know, on Monday morning before the snap data is generally available to the general public. You know, so I look at it overnight, of course, but it's something that bothers me when people kind of blame the wrong people.
Right, because they're trying to get this out as fast as possible and try to beat everyone to the same story of why the Ravens are bad.
There you go. There you go. Okay, so the second guy, similar vein, is another type of lazy reporting you'll often see, is Carl Davis was ineffective in the game. Well, Carl Davis did not make the defensive stat sheet in 22 snaps, which is probably the reason why he got singled out by a couple different people I saw. But he also was on for 22 snaps. 13 of those were runs, and the Ravens allowed just 2.4 yards per rush with him in. So it certainly wasn't 5.1. 2.4 yards per rush, actually fairly dominant. And, you know, I have to call bullshit on that hypothesis also, you know, to what Davis is. You don't have to beat me out on this, right? We have no sponsors.
No, you're good. You're good. We got nothing. No.
All right. Very good.
No. If kids are listening to this and their parents don't want to hear that, send us a message and let us know. Otherwise, we're going with it.
And we'll ignore it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You'll hear the same language here. In fact, you'll hear more appropriate language here than if you go to a Ravens football game.
There you go. There you go. Okay, so now when you're getting into the more reasonable things, Tony Jefferson not being able to tackle.
Oh, I can get behind that. I can get behind that. He has not lived up to what we expected from him.
And that's a broader question. Is you know, we've had problems in coverage with Jefferson, problems in tackling in some cases, but in this case, he missed 2 open field tackles. They happened to come on the 2 longest runs. So those 2 runs totaled 64 yards. Jefferson's 2 misses added about the last 20 of those 64. One added 12 yards on the first and 8 yards on the second, as I'd estimated. But they were both breakaways that had already reached level 3, and Jefferson was then in the uncomfortable position of having to not only get his hands on, but also take down a running back who's heavier than him in level 3, and in many cases probably quicker than him. It was Murray, so it's probably about equal with Jefferson in that case. But it was a difficult assignment, and his play was not really the decider on those. The problem was, those guys got the level 3 in the first place.
Right. He missed tackles, but the Ravens were already screwed before it got to him.
That's right. That's right. So I just want to talk about these 2 plays. And you can go, there's more detail on this on the website, on Russell Street Report. Go into these 2 plays. The first one was a Q3 15 minutes. The second one is Q3 8:05. But just to mention briefly what happened on each of those. The first play of the second half, what happened was that the Vikings ran a play that the Ravens run all the time. Zone block left, naked boot right. And the Ravens usually pass out of that scheme. So they set up a fake run with all the linemen zone blocking to the left while Flacco naked boots to the right side and looks for a receiver at one of 3 levels downfield. Very standard play. Almost every NFL team has it in their playbook. The Ravens have run it twice per game for it seems like the last 9 years. And you know, it's getting so the opponents seem to know it's coming from the Ravens, and they're no longer able to get the really deep passes as often. So anyway, they ran this play, except they actually just ran the ball to the left side out of this zone block, and Keenum continued with an excellent fake on the ball. Za'Darius Smith bit hard on it, probably because he's seen this play run all the time in practice with the Ravens, chased after Keenum, and that left the right side open for Murray's cutback, and he broke into level three, and it was 22 yards before he was even touched, where Jefferson first hit him, actually contacted his hand with his helmet as he was being stiff-armed, and then took it another 13 yards for 35. So anyway, that one was forgivable, I think, certainly not entirely Jefferson's fault, and I blame that one more on Za'Darius Smith than anybody else. The second one was one of the most well-blocked plays you'll ever see. It was the 29-yard touchdown run by Murray that happened midway through that third quarter, their only touchdown of the day. It had a bunch of things going on, but at the heart of it were two outstanding combination blocks by Elfline, the center a lot of people wanted the Ravens to get, and Riley Reiff, the left tackle. Each of them pinned their respective linemen for the guy next to them, the left guard and the right guard, moved to level two and took out Mosley and Owusu, and those two guys then each had a valuable level two block. And meanwhile, Suggs had made a move across the face of the left tight end, a guy who I can't even read his number on screen, but he was sealed. Suggs was sealed easily by that tight end, and the play went to his left. And again, it was 20-plus yards before Jefferson even got a hand on him, and that was inside the 10-yard line. And he couldn't get him tripped up and got in the end zone. But the problem was at the line of scrimmage, it wasn't way downfield.
All right, so it's not so these were problems, but not all Jefferson's problem.
That's right, not all Jefferson. So much broader problems than that. And typically, fans want to simplify these kind of things, so they want simple solutions that ideally are correctable. You know, it was this guy that we can all agree we want to get rid of anybody, or it was this injury which is causing this. But oftentimes, it's just more complex than that, and it takes time to sort it out. Well, let's go on one more into what might be a reasonable thing. Is that the defensive line was tired from the extended drives. Okay. Well, not an unreasonable thing because, you know, the seemed like a lot of those Vikings plays lasted a long time.
Right, but there's a lot of players over there.
There are, like, exactly. So there's six defensive linemen you had to share what were 151 total individual snaps. They had to play about 25 snaps each. And there's only 2.36 linemen on the field per play. That's their average for the entire game. So if you look at the snap totals, Pierce had 44, Williams had 43. Those guys are already Ironmen. They play a lot of snaps normally. I know Williams is coming back from an injury, but there's nothing outrageous about the totals I'm seeing.
Right, that's not a really ridiculous number. 44 sounds really reasonable and normal.
It sounds reasonable for the leader on your defensive line. That's what it sounds reasonable for. The Ravens have actually had a player, James Jones, in 1996, played 90 defensive line snaps in one game against the Rams. 90.
That sounds like a horrible game to watch.
Let alone be on the field.
37-31
overtime thriller, the Ravens' probably most exciting game of their first season.
Oh, okay. But
other than maybe the opener of the whole year.
Yeah. Cool.
So anyway, I don't think it was anything about the amount of play that any of these players are going on. So the other thing is just the defensive linemen are having a lousy game. And you know, you'll see really bad games tossed on the defensive linemen. I think that's also a little bit spurious. I looked at three categories of runs and basically looked at four DB packages, five DB packages, and six DB packages. By the way, for the Ravens, that is synonymous. If you say four DBs, that means they have three defensive linemen on the field. If you say five DBs, in every case, they had two defensive linemen on the field. And if you said six DBs, they ran the dime package eight times. Every one of those times, they had one defensive lineman on the field. So if you look at the times they had four defensive backs, which means three defensive linemen on the field, they rushed the ball for 3.0 yards per carry on those 21 carries. Far cry from the real problem. When they only had like two defensive linemen on the field, they rushed the ball 10 for 96 and 2 for 10 when they had six on the field. So they averaged 8.8 yards per carry when they had either two or one defensive lineman on the field. So I'm going to step out and say here that the defensive line is not really the problem. It's the other players that are supporting the defensive line that are a much bigger part of the problem when it's mostly happening against the nickel and against the dime. And if I had to pick a single reason, and I don't try and make this a less complex problem than it really is, because there are a lot of factors.
Right.
But if I had to pick a single one that I haven't heard often before.
If you had to Hilton it up.
If I held it up, if I, it's that the nickel defense is vulnerable to the run when the other teams has eligible receivers that can block effectively. And the Vikings really showed that in this game. They had tight ends who blocked effectively, and they had wide receivers who threw effective blocks as well. So that works very well when you force the other team to put additional defensive backs on the field and not have defensive linemen. So I think they were pretty good at that.
All right, so Ken McCusick is blaming the coaching. It's time to clear out the coaching because the game plan is not working.
If that's what you heard, that's great, man.
Hey, I'm trying to give you some headlines here. It sounds like it's the defensive. The nickel isn't working. That's being called from the sidelines. There's your problem.
Well, the nickel is being called from the sidelines, but there's not really any other choice if the other team puts three wide receivers on the field than to play the nickel. You can't do much else.
All right, so this team's just not designed to cover three wide receivers.
Or not designed to stop the run when three wide receivers are on the field if the wide receivers know how to block. And the Vikings wide receivers did, and that was really the issue in this game, in my opinion.
All right. So, okay. So this team is – and, I mean, I could get behind that, that this team, it clearly can't stop the run. And if the difference is these teams with crappy quarterbacks are beating us because they're leaving those wide receivers in to help block – I can kind of understand that, and that's why the quarterback isn't beating us. It's that all this little stuff is working.
Right. I mean, there was, if you look at last week with Trubisky, it certainly wasn't. It wasn't a lot of what he did. He threw. He had about three big plays the whole game. He had a touchdown pass. They had another touchdown pass that was thrown by a running back, and then they had the one first down play that they set up the game winning field goal with. But those were about the only three pass plays for them the whole day that were really special.
All right.
And otherwise, it was all runs. But anyway, with similar situation here, they didn't do a lot with the pass either.
All right. Well, don't worry. We have Miami this week, and their running back's pretty good, and their quarterback's not very good. So it'll be more of the same.
Probably be more of the same. I certainly, if I were coaching the Dolphins or the offensive coordinator for the Dolphins, I would lean heavily on the run this week. They ran the ball effectively even last year against the Ravens when the Ravens had a much stouter run defense. So I would expect. The Ravens to see a lot of Jay Ajayi if he's active. He missed practice today, I believe, or maybe he was limited, but one of those two, he's on the list.
Right, he's been messing up my fantasy scores this year, so I'm planning on him having a big week for me this week. Let's try to go positive. Let's pull out some positive stuff to finish up the show today. And one thing is that Jalen Hill had his first game.
Yeah, so Jalen Hill, just to take us back for a moment, if we go back to training camp, was the star of the Ravens preseason. So he and Brent Urban, two guys who ended up being hurt, of course, were the two best players for the Ravens in this preseason. Jalen Hill was the MVP, in my opinion. And showed all sorts of ball skills, just terrific ability to track the ball in the air, and looked like an excellent slot corner or even an outside corner in the future. They played him in both places to try and give him a little bit of both. And he's back now. And interestingly, Lardarius Webb started the game, played the first 17 snaps in the slot. Then they got Hill in for two snaps. And from then on, he played the majority of the snaps the rest of the game, including the last five when the game was still a little bit in doubt, probably. Certainly was. Early in the fourth quarter when he started that streak of five. But he played the bulk of the snaps the end of the game, 9 of the last 18, actually. And don't want to go into every single one of these, but I do have an accounting of the play-by-play out there. But in the very brief time he played, he came in, he made a tackle right off the edge, hard undercut of the running back, took him down for a gain of 5 on 3rd and 13. They took down McKinnon. He had a great pass defense on a zero cross. Zero cross means that the receiver, usually from the slot on the far side, is crossing to the opposite side, and he does so effectively at the line of scrimmage or maybe a yard or two beyond it. And it's very difficult to defense because a receiver can typically either break quicker or run faster than the cornerback, the slot corner who's trailing him. So if you don't have a linebacker to break it up or defensive end or something gets his hand up to break it up, usually he's completed. Hill not only was able to keep up with the route, he got underneath of Thielen on the route and knocked it away for a past the fence. So terrific job on that. He should have drawn an OPI on Thielen later in the game. Thielen converted a 3rd and 5 for a gain of 14. Right out of his break, he pushed hard on Hill, and it's the kind of separation that's almost always called. Both Trent Green and Greg Gumbel made a point to say, you know, this is unusual that they wouldn't have called that, not exactly those words. But anyway, debut was outstanding for Jalen Hill. Very excited about what he brings to the Ravens, and may actually change how the secondary will look going forward.
Right. So you think he might be a better fit than Webb?
Well, I think there's a couple possibilities. I think Lardarius Webb can help the team other places, and the Ravens have struggled on the back end to find a guy who has ball hawking skills and some ability to know where he's supposed to be on the field. And I think that's been some of the problem with Jefferson. Jefferson at Arizona last year is much more valuable closer to the line of scrimmage, either blanketing a tight end in man-to-man coverage, playing the run closer to the line of scrimmage like that. And he's not going to play in exactly the same situation. But I think his back-end skills are the weakest part of this game, and they're emphasized in what he's doing here in Baltimore because he plays a lot on the back end. I'd much prefer him to play close to the line of scrimmage. And maybe that means take a few snaps off, or maybe it means he's more of an X factor who plays close to the line of scrimmage and might occasionally drop deep. But in any case, I look for them to use him somehow differently. And it also could be a case where Webb is a guy who you can move around the field as well, because Webb rushes the passer fairly effectively and knows how to exploit the lineman who's rushing in front of him, the end usually, to either take the B gap or take the C gap to the quarterback. So I like the ways they can use Webb differently when they have more flexibility than just as a pure slot corner, and Hill can do that job.
How is Webb at running routes? You know, if you're going to move them, use them in a different way.
You know, there have been a couple guys in the past. Chris McAllister always said he could play offense when it was a few years after Deion had got his chance with the Cowboys to play some. But
right.
I remember going to camp and he got a chance to play wide receiver it might have been a preseason game, or it might have just been a practice at the camp at Westminster.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that in a long time, where you got the guy that plays on both sides.
Yeah, we've got Ricard, but yeah, you're right. It's not too often. Usually it's in goal line or something. It's not
right, right. And yeah, it's not wide receivers or tight ends. It's linemen.
Yeah.
There were a few big plays the defense made. As they continued, they're now second in interceptions and fumbles. The Jaguars passed them with that big game with the Colts. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, there's a positive.
Yeah, I mean, ball skills on the back end are really not the issue. In the secondary, I should say, are really not the issue. So they've been good with that. They could stand to deflect more passes at the line of scrimmage. They got one in this game from Brandon Williams, which is nice to see him come back. But they're missing Brent Urban. They're missing some of the pocket push they've had at other times. They'd probably like to take on a weaker offensive line and have a chance to get some more push and some more balls batted up that will give them more chances. And frankly, some of the linebacker play needs to improve. And Mosley was playing great the first couple of weeks, hasn't been so good lately. And Sam Badawasso, he had a good week about 2-3 weeks ago, and now he hasn't been that good the last few weeks. And he needs to improve his game, both against the run and against the pass. So hopefully we'll see something from those guys.
All right. My final takeaway from the Vikings game is that I think next time there's a road game in Minnesota, we need to tell all the Raven fans to wear black, because it's impossible to see any Raven fans in the stands when everyone there is wearing purple.
Yeah, it's very hard. But let me tell you, we went to the game, and it is like sitting in a freaking greenhouse. It's a horrible stadium. I'm photosensitive, so I don't like light when I'm breathing indoor air. It's like a combination that's very bad for me. And we were on the lit side of the field, and you see all these middle-aged women waving fans on themselves. I mean, they're really having a problem with the heat. I was too. And it's a bothersome environment to see a football game in. So I think the Astrodome, they figured it out early on, and they painted the roof so that they wouldn't get that direct sunlight. But they were originally trying to grow grass inside. And they finally gave up on that dumb idea and decided they'd make it comfortable for the fans. And
gotcha. I did not think that heat was an issue in Minnesota.
Yeah, they had the windows open. They have these windows open on one side. They're supposed to cool things, but it's really not a very good cooling effect. I'd say it's, high 70s inside.
Well, my only experience of that is the Super Bowl when the power went out and it got really warm really fast without air conditioning in the Superdome.
Yep.
So, all right, this is normally where we do the mailbag, but we're recording late because of my work schedule. So I think let's push the mailbag. Let's do the mailbag with our offensive show, especially since this is a short week. The Ravens play in 4 days, 3 days.
Yeah, they play on Thursday night, so 3 days.
3 days that where we get to talk about the defense once again and see them play. So it's exciting that we do have Thursday night football and the color rush. So we get the all purple, speaking of purple, this week.
Yeah, I'm so underwhelmed by the color rush jerseys, but that's all right. We'll enjoy the night.
I like the color rush jerseys. I don't like that the NFL seemed to adjust the uniforms for the colorblind people. So now it's one team's wearing like white and stuff. Like the Raiders wore white. I thought that was silly. They should be black, all black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their fans are in like the black hole.
Yeah,
it's weird that they were all white. So.
Yeah. Didn't give you an update on Tyus Bowser because I remember your Tyus Bowser color rush jersey.
That is my jersey for Thursday.
There you go. 5 snaps in this game, so it's he's been going on a very disappointing snap total recently.
Yeah, something got him in that doghouse, and I hope to see him get out. I was enjoyed him early in the season and definitely in the preseason. So, all right, Ken. Till then, everyone should go on over to Russell Street Report, where you've got this written out in a whole lot more detail.
Yep. So if you look for Film Study over there, you can follow me on Twitter at Film Study Ravens. Great conversation there. A lot of good, highly analytic fans who I really enjoy hearing from. I'd love to hear from you. How about your show, Josh? Tell them about it.
My show is Section 336. This week we will be recording on Wednesday. We're pushing the show a little bit because of my work schedule. And so we're recording Wednesday, and we're going to talk about the World Series because we now have the matchup. It is Dodgers and Astros. Thankfully, not the Yankees. At least we all say thank you. Major League Baseball is crying because they don't get those New York Ravens anymore. We're going to talk about the fact that across the country, baseball ratings are down for national games but up for local games as baseball has become a more regional sport where you care about your team and no one else. As well as baseball is looking to expand into Portland and Montreal, and with that comes a whole lot of restructuring. So we're going to talk about that.
Oh, that makes me just so angry. I can't even say that they will expand into Montreal and give them the freaking Expos back and get the Nationals the frick out of here.
I think that would be wonderful. I think there's very few people who... Actually, you know what? I'll go out there and say there's no one who's listening to a Ravens podcast who is also a Nationals fan.
No one.
That okay. I've been on the search. If you are the fact, you can hit us up on Twitter. Send it to hashtag film study mailbag.
Do you mean pound sign film study mailbag?
Yeah, pound sign. Exactly. but I have been on a search for multiple years. I cannot find someone who's a Ravens fan and a Nationals fan. You get a Redskin Oriole fan, but only because the Nationals didn't exist. But by the time the Ravens came, you already had your choice in baseball teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never found it, and I never will.
Right,
so we're going to be talking about that. A lot of baseball talk this week on Section 336.
So 100-degree heat possible for Game 1 of the World Series, I'm told?
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Anyway.
All right, Ken. We will talk probably tomorrow evening. Have a good night.
Take it easy, Josh.